Our aim tonight is to rather unashamedly share some of the teachings of Pathwork, because it has strengthened and enriched so many of our lives. We want to convey as much of that meaning and that benefit to you new ones to the path as we can at this time when we are together. We really would want you to be able to take something home with you tonight, something that you can walk away with that's in your psychological and spiritual pockets, that you can actually use in your life to make a difference. Something that you can draw upon daily that will give you nourishment and hope about the condition of being human, and what is available for us as human beings that may not yet be known to us. These teachings that we are sharing tonight can strengthen your relationship, most of all with yourself, strengthen your relationship with others, your partners, your children, your parents, your friends, strengthen your relationships with your religious faith, whatever that is, strengthen your relationship with your political commitments, with your work in the world, and have you become much more effective in all of your human endeavors. I think it's really important for those of you who are new tonight, to know that Pathwork is not religious, although we do, in a quite unusual way, focus on what we call the divine. Some people call it higher power, others call it source, some call it spirit, the universe, the Tao, the Tao, Allah, by whatever name we call the great mystery of loving creation. In Pathwork, we do seek to connect with this divinity that is in ourselves and each other and in the universe. We human beings have evolved to a particular place in our evolution and our stage as a human species, as we all know, and we've talked about a great deal, by achieving phenomenal, great mastery in relationship to the material world, spectacular accomplishments technologically. However, our capacity as human beings, rather than human doings, has not kept up with our technological accomplishments. We fall behind, and we fail miserably when it comes to creating a quality of loving and harmonious relationships with each other. We don't know how. We fall behind in our ability to get along in the world. We fall behind in our willingness to cooperate and to take care of each other, to work together, to solve the world's problems of hunger, violence, and injustice. And the work of this path is to help us recognize and own our own limitations as human beings, so that we can access the potential that we are, that we have not yet tapped, and so that we can move beyond our current limitations, our current state of evolution. To evolve our humanity as a species, to advance beyond our current level of consciousness, which, by the way, is not working, we have to be able to see exactly where we are. Not everything that we see can be changed. Please come in and find a seat, or there's a seat in the back.
Yeah.
Okay. Not everything that we see can be changed, but nothing can be changed until we first see it. And this is the work of the path, to be able to see
who we are.
We cannot heal what we have not made known to ourselves and accepted. We cannot heal what we have not revealed to ourselves. We cannot get out of the swamp unless we know that we are in the swamp. And we can't get out of the swamp unless we know that it is possible to get out of the swamp. The work of the path is about human consciousness and our capacity to heal and evolve our consciousness beyond where we are now, and there transform ourselves as individuals, transform ourselves collectively, our groups, our community, our churches. Our greatest songs as human beings is still unsung. I'll say that again. Our greatest song as human beings is still unsung. And that is to birth our divine nature that we are cut off from. So if after this evening you find that you would like to experience pathwork more, there is a list on the table. We will take a break where you can sign up and you will receive our mailings from our Connections Committee. There is a free pathwork lecture study the first Wednesday of every month from 7 to 9 here at Friends Meeting House. You will find those brochures on the table when we take a break. And again, to repeat, as for tonight, we're committed to giving you an experience that you can take home with you and use in your life, whether or not you ever attend another pathwork event. We hope that you will leave with something. So we welcome all of you. We thank you very much for taking the time from your busy lives and making an investment in the life of the Spirit. It truly fills our hearts that you have chosen to be here. And we invite you to open up to receive the blessing that you are offering us by joining us tonight. Thank you again.
My faulty self, yes.
The greatest pain in life is the estrangement from our true self. Yesterday, I received in the mail this beautiful quote from Barb Steffen. Thank you, Barb. That reads like this. And by the way, as I was preparing this workshop, things would just trickle in from the world. Oh, I need to share that. Oh, that belongs in this event. And how I hold that is Spirit was creating and contributing to the event. So this is the quote Barb sent me. I am homesick for a place that I am not sure even exist. One where my heart is full and my soul is understood. This quote speaks beautifully to a longing that lives in all of our hearts. Everywhere, all the time, we are in touch with this longing, whether we know it or not. There is some kind of way that we all feel cut off, disconnected, different, exiled, and shamed. Not all the time, but much of the time. And we pick up our ache and our hurt each day, and we go bravely into the world anyway to do what we have to do, but sometimes feeling forlorn, in some way lost and empty. This is an aspect of the condition of being human that we all share in common. We're all in this boat together. No matter how we appear to each other, we're all the same. Sometimes we feel like we actually don't have a home in this world. In some ways, we are children of darkness. There are many ways that we try to medicate this ache. Doing, TV, chemicals, shopping, trying to prove ourselves and our worth. But deep down, we just feel homesick for a place that we don't even know whether or not it exists. A place of great peace and belongingness. This is the pain of the estrangement from our real, true selves. The guide in Pathwork says that the deepest longing in our heart is to connect with this divine in ourselves and in the universe. And that actually much of our pain and much of our grieving is that we have lost this connection. And we put it on many things, but underneath it all, we long to get connected back up with something in us that is true and constant and eternal and forever. So for our meditation this evening, and to set our intention and tone for the evening, we're going to play a beautiful song by Skylar Grey called Coming Home. The song speaks to, it sings to the pain, the ache, the hurt of the human condition that you're all a part of. But she sings confidently about a place within us and within the universe that transcends, that is beyond the limitation and suffering that we know on an ordinary day-to-day basis. So I want to invite you to take a few deep, quiet breaths. Close your eyes. Straighten your spine and drop your shoulders softly so that your chest is open and expanded. So that what wants to get in can get in, and you can receive the blessing of this song. I'm going to read the bell, and for a few moments, I ask you just to tune into your breathing. Joanne will play the song. Following the song, my invitation is to just be with it and reflect upon it. And when the bell rings, we will invite you back to the room. The hardest thing of all in our lives is that we all live with the pain of self-rejection. We judge, we blame, we shame ourselves. We dismiss, we neglect, we ignore, we mistreat ourselves. We don't stand up for ourselves. We don't give to the world the unique gifts that we have to offer. And let me assure you, we all, every single one of us, has something unique to offer in life that no one else has. No one else but you can offer. There is not a single soul now or ever who was, is, or will be you. Only you have that job. We do harmful things to our body, to our minds, our hearts, and our spirit. And because we so reject ourselves, that causes us to feel undeserving, insecure, inferior, undesirable, in other words, rejectable. But we don't see that this is our own rejection that causes this pain. We blame others for rejecting us, and we blame the world, and we blame life. But that is an error. That is not to say that there aren't unkindnesses and unfairnesses that come to us. Yes, of course they do. Others can let us down and hurt us a lot. But it is because of our own unkindness toward ourselves that we feel empty and hollow and deprived and alone. And we try to cope with it, make up for it in many false ways. But you can't make up for self-rejection. Nothing anyone can do for us, including loving us. Or nothing outside of us can make up for or take away the pain of how we reject ourselves. And the false ways that we seek to feel better merely medicate the pain of our self-rejection and numb it for a while. We eat too much. We drink too much. We watch too much TV. We shop too much. We work too much. We talk too much. We have too many activities. We read too much, we clean too much, we have endless strategies for zoning out. And today, our youth have the readiness of technology to bury themselves in, to run away from the pain of their own self-rejection. But because we reject ourselves, we take it personally when others make mistakes or don't somehow measure up to or meet our expectations. But the truth is, others have nothing to do with our value and worth. Because of the limitations of others, we feel that they are rejecting us. Another person's defects have nothing to do with us, other than it's often an inconvenience. Their limitations are not a rejection of you. Others are just their wobbly beings, just like you are, doing the best they can and hiding their limitations as best they can, but you take them personally. More often than not, the defects and the limitations and the complications in another person is just the outcome of how they're rejecting themselves. And it's not easy to take each other's defects and complications and issues. We are hard to take, all of us. But someone else's errors are not a factor in your rejection. It is you and you only. And it's a powerful thing when you wake up to this. We pridefully pump ourselves up with demands upon others, with knowledge, with trappings, with appearances, with power, control, do-gooder attitudes. We try fiercely to get approval from the world to make up for the approval that we don't give ourselves. Never works. We pretend to be more than we feel like we are to cover up our self-rejection. We hide and pretend and end up cutting ourselves off from others that we long to connect with. And we feel alone and singular in this self-rejection, thinking that it's only us, not realizing that it is the condition of being human. We are all on one planet and we all share the same consciousness. We are bruised deeply in our souls by our rejection of ourselves. It is the common thread among us and the source of everything that is wrong with us in our lives and in the world. A cruel war is raging within, among us, and in the world from the dark dungeon of our self-rejection. Often we feel as if we can barely hang on. That's a painful way to be there. So I want you to invite you to take out your journal. If you don't have one, we have plenty of journals and plenty of pens. And I want you to take just a moment and reject about how you, write about how you reject yourself, what you reject in yourself, write about what you refuse to accept in yourself. And by the way, you will not have to share this. This is your own personal reflection, so don't worry. Thank you. Yes, the instructions are to write about what you see in terms of how you reject yourself. What it is in you that you refuse to accept about yourself. Your own self-rejecting cruelty. Take just a few minutes. Write fiercely, don't think too much about it, just let it rip, just let it pour out. Right. How do you reject yourself? How do you judge yourself? How do you blame yourself? How do you dismiss yourself? What do you refuse to accept about yourself? Just let yourself see it and know it. Raise your hand if you need paper and pencil. Don't be too thoughtful about it, just let it rip. just hold on to those thoughts and those notes for a moment. We'll be working with them later throughout the evening. But just kind of start to take the first steps into presencing how unkind you are to you. So, because of how we human beings, all of us across all times, have secretly rejected ourselves, we have had to create a false self, a fake self, in order to cope with this rejection and to pretend that we are more or less than we think we are in order to cope and get by. For some, they don't even pretend. They are so weighed down and made hopeless from self-rejection that they recklessly harm themselves and others in life. But for most of us, we merely hide and pretend that we're more than we are, stronger than we feel we are, or weaker than we feel we are, employing some sort of strategy to get something from others to make up for how badly we feel about ourselves. Because inside, we have brutalized ourselves, written ourselves off in some very important way. And because this false self that we fashion to hide how we really feel about ourselves, lest others find out, because it's false, because it's made up, because it is pretend, it is therefore frightened, insecure, and wobbly and fragile. Because it's only fake. The happiness that the false self seeks is only temporary. It doesn't last because it seeks something from outside of itself to bolster it, to hold it up, to make it okay. Other people's approval, others doing for us, counting on others' admiration for us to be okay, or demanding that others give in to us so that we can feel secure, or counting on some external power of trappings, our status. All trying to get the safety that is lost because at our core, we reject ourselves. So we make ourselves dependent upon something outside of ourselves to be okay. And anything on the outside just deals with our surface pain. And furthermore, it doesn't last. And we have to keep doing over and over and over. And it clearly doesn't touch that deep pain inside. And this false self is terribly afraid of change, even if its current state is very painful. Because it's so afraid, it would rather keep things the same, even if it means staying in pain, and it feels a modicum of safety, rather than to feel the fear and the risk of trying to change so that things might be better. This false self is self-centered. It's usually seeking its own self-advantage. Because it's insecure, it can't trust things can work out unless it's always selfishly on the lookout for itself. The false self is like the engine that drives our lives, our world, and its fuel, its gas that runs this engine, our self-centered fear, protecting our puny fears for safety. Self-will, needing control at all costs, no matter the price to self and others, and pride, pretending to be more or worse than we are. So we live in a world inside ourselves and outside of ourselves that manipulates, that carelessly loves, a world that is sick, wounded, and a wounding place to be. Given this, given how we have ourselves falsely constructed, life is a constant struggle with occasional moments of gratification. And the constant fear of what we don't have that we think we must have in order to be happy, or having finally got what we always wanted, now we're terrified of losing it. So we're still shaking.
Yes?
Yes. And the false self causes pain, illness, danger, and crisis because its motivations are not peaceful, they're not loving, and they're not kind. And this false self is second nature to every one of us. And it's a painful way to live, but we truly don't know any other way. We aren't even clear that that's how we are. Usually we feel and think, well, I am that way, but it's only me. I feel that way, but no one else does. I'm alone. Not knowing that to some degree or another, others are suffering in the very same way. And if we're fortunate enough to know that everyone feels this way to some degree or another, then the mistake we make is to resign ourselves simply thinking that this is the way it is, this is the way it has to be, and it always will be. This is how we human beings are. We are born, we suffer, then we die. You're cynical. Our consciousness tells us that this is life and this is all there is. This limited false self is very negative, and it causes us to take life very personally. And it causes unpleasant things to happen in life that we blame others for, or we blame life and we feel like a victim to whatever unfortunate things come our way. We hold it that life causes unfulfilling and frustrating outcomes. And we treat ourselves as victims to life rather than as victims to false, negative human consciousness. But it is our false selves individually and collectively that causes the misfortune, the adversity, the unhappiness, and the unluck in our lives and in our world. Because we reject ourselves, we reject and blame others, and we generate endless conflicts. Because we mistreat ourselves, we mistreat others and the planet. Because we think that the solutions are all material and external, that will take care of our wounded selves, we spin around in a materialistic world of competition, grabbing power, control, cowering in fear, and we create this outer reality from our inner reality of self-rejection. Because of our own negative, fear-based attitude toward what comes to us, we create our own suffering. Okay, John. So how on earth is it that all of us on the planet, no matter where we are from, no matter what our station in life is, no matter what one has or does not have at all times, we reject? How is this so? Because human beings have not evolved into the capacity to love. So we all got children by reject. We all, as children, got rejected by immature parents, who to some degree or another were rejected by immature parents, who were rejected by, in some way, by immature rejecting parents. We have been on earth breathing the same air, being warmed by the same moon, and watching the same moon for 200,000 years. Civilization as we know it has been around for 6,000 years. There are 7 billion of us on this earth. It's not as if we have not come a long way. We have, but we have a long way to go. For instance, I was telling people just before we started tonight, it was once an ancient law in England, Wales, and Ireland that a man could legally beat his wife with a stick if the stick was no thicker than his thumb. So we've made some progress. It was only 150 years ago that slavery was abolished in the United States. Yes, we have evolved somewhat. Again, our technological advances as a species are light years beyond how we have evolved, and our capacity for equality, justice, compassion, mercy, love, kindness, truth, and a consciousness of the harm that we do to each other and to the planet. It is no longer legally sanctioned that men own and beat their wives, but men still beat their wives. It is no longer overlooked that women abuse their children, and women abuse their children. While these behaviors may be on the far end of the continuum to what some of us might do, it is common for us to rage at our partners, our children, and to blame others for our unhappiness. This is the human condition, and we have a ways to go. Martin Luther King taught that while the arc of the moral universe is long, it heads toward justice. We are heading toward greater lovingness and rights for all, but at a snail's pace compared to our technological accomplishments. How do our harmful ways occur and get perpetuated? When we perpetuate our own rejection of ourselves, we are cutting ourselves off from the divine within us, that aspect which could and wants to guide our lives
with strength
and wisdom and love and brotherhood and sisterhood and fairness and justice. We make false pseudo decisions from the false self, and we live with a bereft soul. All of our unrecognized and unrenounced negativity cuts us off from the deep, pure, divine, true love that lives inside of us, waiting to be called upon, tapped, and accessed to heal us, guide us, and forge our coming evolution toward greater love and justice, first and foremost for ourselves and then for the world. Today in our evolution, we are called upon to break this cycle of self-rejection and hatred for no reason other than we now have the technological capacity to destroy ourselves. So if we don't evolve our humanness and learn to break the cycle, we may literally wipe ourselves out. Barb has agreed to do a process for us to demonstrate for you how the vault self operates personally in a relationship and how we can move from our reactivity to our real selves. Are you ready, Barb? We have not rehearsed this. This is going to be completely extemporaneous and spontaneous.
Oh, boy.
Do you want to mark this on the ball?
Let us know if you can hear. So, Barb, what would you like to work on?
Well, we had talked about an issue I'm really deciding to own and work on is when Mike, my partner, drinks, even if he has one beer, or if I see beer in the refrigerator, I feel a panic. I have a reaction. And sometimes, you know, what I've done is he's, my reaction can be so overboard that he'll not drink just to not put up with me, which is something I like.
It works, huh?
However, on the other hand, when he's angry at me, that's a way for him, you know what I mean? You know, I'm going to have a drink then.
We should have just a minute, sorry.
And so I'm sort of, I mean, I'm recognizing that I have a huge dependency on him not drinking to be okay.
Okay, so tell us something about what your nastiness is, your reactions are, what you think. You probably don't say it all out loud, although you may. How does it go? Just let yourself step into that energy.
Oh, my God. Well, I won't need the microphone. I won't. Oh, my gosh. I can smell it on your breath. You've been boozing. You boozer! You're just a drunken boozer, and I can smell it, and it's awful, and I don't want to be anywhere near you. Go away. Just leave. I can't stand it. Go downstairs. Don't talk to me. Don't even talk to me, because, I hate it. Oh, I'm really kind of getting into it. I'm really feeling my panic about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And distress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel this huge, I feel betrayed. Mm-hmm. How could you do this? You know I hate this. Mm-hmm. You know, why are you doing this? You're not here, you're gone. I can't even talk to you. Because you're different. You act different and funny and there's no one here. Mm-hmm. And I want you to just leave me alone, go away, and then I'm just upset.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, maybe he had one beer.
So, Barb, see if you can check into your body and see what you're feeling in your body.
Oh. Okay. I feel my body vibrating from saying all that stuff.
Yeah.
And fear. I mean,
Where's the tension in your body? Where do you feel the pain? See if you can connect with
Interestingly, me. I'm very aware of my hands.
Okay. Uh-huh.
They're really trembly, and I feel a lot of vibration.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere else in your body you feel the tension of the panic and the upset and the anger?
My throat.
And your throat?
Yeah, my throat.
Anywhere else? So breathe into that tension and see if there are any awarenesses or feelings that come up.
Wringing my hands, I feel this horrible worry.
Are you
I'm very aware.
Some earlier experience.
that my dad's not home, and so that means he's drinking, and if he, and so I don't know when he's going to come home.
Mm.
I don't know when he's going to come home, but when he comes home, there will be hell to pay.
Mm.
Oh, and it can be in the middle of the night, it can be, and I'm feeling, and screaming and things being thrown, and it's my mother's angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then my,
And you feel scared and out of control. Yeah. Mm. Just let yourself have have those feelings.
I see myself laying in bed, and I can hear it all going on.
Yes.
And I feel terrified.
Yes.
They sound like they're going to kill each other.
Yes.
And I know my siblings must have been, but I just feel frozen with fear.
Yes.
You know, they're not saying, but you can't pretend, you know, just waiting for it to stop. To please stop. And I think I have this fear that Mike's gonna drink out of control. And you know what's funny is I end up getting out of control. Mm-hmm. I just realized that. Mm-hmm. I become my mother. You know, this panic comes up in me. Oh my God, no. And I have to watch this, and I feel I think I'm hyper-vigilant about it. Yes. That if I don't watch it, you know, that,
So you can see that it's a past childhood pain that's not completely resolved, that has you put blame and accusation on mine that you right now are seeing it does not belong to him. How is it to sit with your own heartbreak about this? Does that feel releasing or comforting in any way? To know what it really is?
Yeah. You know what I'm really getting in touch with is that I've not really owned that there wasn't anything I could do with it.
There was nothing you could do.
Yeah, and that horrible feeling of being helpless, and it's like, but I can help it now, goddammit, and that is never going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I'm going overboard. I didn't ever connect that.
Yeah.
I'm over-controlling now. Because there wasn't anything I could do.
And the only help that can really come now is for you to help that her child, to console her, to comfort her, to embrace her, to be with her, to soothe her, to let her know that that time is gone, it is not now, and that she's not going to get protection by trying to get Mike not to drink. She can get protection from you. Can you close by giving her a comforting, consoling, loving, embracing response?
Yeah, I'm kind of seeing her, you know, seeing myself laying in that bed, terrified. and like letting her know I'm here.
Mm.
You know, that I'm an adult now.
Mm.
And that I can be here for. And that I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry for ignoring the impact of all that on her. I'm so sorry. I'd like to believe that I got smart enough and bright enough and successful enough, but it didn't impact. You know, and I really denied this part of it. You know, this kid who has never gotten wonder over that. And I, yeah, so I guess I'd say that I abandoned you.
Mm-hmm. I am now rejecting you.
Yeah. Yes. And I am not going to do that anymore. When I, you know, start to get scared, I'm going to remember you and let you know I'm here and I'm sorry and we're okay now. Mm-hmm. We're okay now.
Okay. Nothing's,
yeah, bad's going to happen. Yeah, the only bad thing that was happening was me. Mm-hmm. And occasionally my partner.
And occasionally her partner. Thanks, Dawn. That was great.
So one of the goals of Pathwork is to come to know and see and work with these dark places of self-rejection that causes so much limitation and pain and unfulfillment in our lives. Each lecture we study of 258 helps us distinguish one piece, one block, one inch of this false self that was created to cope with our original rejection. And then our self-rejection, which we perpetuate and we pass along. Each step we take in recognizing our falseness brings us closer to and in touch with the treasure of goodness that lives within us. All of us. No one is spared a false self, and no one is left out from having a divine self. Our false self separates us from our real selves, our big selves, and yes, there is more to us than our false selves. There is a real divine self that courses through our beings, begging to be let in, begging to connect with us, to help us, and to bring life to us. Our false selves, our little selves, tell us untruths and we create our lives from these untruths. The false selves tell us that we are powerless, helpless, we're victims, there is nothing that we can do, that it's hopeless, that the universe is fundamentally a hostile place, and that we are each other's enemies. The truth is that a human false consciousness is the enemy. And we can be working to eliminate the negative false consciousness, not eliminate each other. We can stop choosing our false beliefs and attitudes that come from the false self and bit by bit begin to choose the attitudes that are more true and accurate from our deeper divine being. I can choose to give myself to love. Life works when we choose from our more loving nature than from our self-centered selves. Loving of ourselves first and then loving toward others. Life works best when we consider the common good rather than simply our own personal advantage. Life works best when rather than strategize and manipulate to get what we want, we are open and transparent about who we are. We ask for what we want and need it. If we get it, great. If not, we say ouch and let go. Life works best when our priority is not to win and be top dog, but when we are a stand for equality and brotherhood and sisterhood. Life works best when our priority is spiritual rather than material. When our material resources are merely a factor to enrich our lives, they do not establish our well-being or our worth or our superiority over others. False consciousness teaches us that we have to be bigger, better, and more to be lovable, that we have to win, be right, defend ourselves to be okay. and that we and others are unworthy of our love until we have solved all of our problems. We will accept ourselves after we get ourselves all squared away. Our false self teaches us that it's okay to judge ourselves and others, that they deserve it, that we deserve it, that we nor others are worthy of our acceptance until we get ourselves straightened out. It teaches us that vengeance and revenge and punishment is the way, and that being top dog is the path to happiness. And if you can't be top dog, then be the worst bottom dog you can. This is the way.
It's not true.
Happiness is an inside job and comes from turning around our rejection of ourselves to an honest acceptance of ourselves just as we are right now. No better, no worse. We are worth embracing ourselves just as we are. That does not mean that we approve of ourselves on all counts or that we like everything about ourselves. It means that I lay claim to, I own myself as I am now, without judgment, blame, or justification. It means that we wrap our arms around our inevitably broken and unclean selves and extend an act of love and acceptance rather than a sending away and a rejection. Billy?
So I'm going to do a little process, but let me set it up first. It's really some journal exercise. There's an unconscious part of us that always wants to be right and feel good about ourselves and really feel superior. And the problem with feeling superior is everybody else needs to be what? Inferior. Good. This is the advanced class. Yeah. I really don't need to do this. We can skip ahead. So we unconsciously do things and think things that, and you know, thoughts are energy, so sometimes thinking things are almost as bad as or worse than doing things that don't support a healthy sense of ourselves or a connection with others. And part of our biology actually supports this, unfortunately, in something the guide calls negative pleasure. And some of you are familiar with this, some of you may be familiar with it in a different discipline and with a different name. But negative pleasure is that juicy, good feeling we get from something negative. And so I'll give you some examples, and then give you an opportunity to write in your journal some of your own, and you don't have to share these with anybody. I love to gossip. I'm the worst person to tell a secret to because I can't wait to tell your secret to somebody else, particularly if it's really something bad. You know, did you know what happened? Or like, did you not hear what happened to Bob? Oh, you didn't hear? It's totally awful. It's so awful I can hardly bring myself to tell you. And I can't wait. If someone cuts me off in traffic, I can go into road rage. I can scream at them. I mean, my kids are like, Dad, how about it? But I love that self-righteous, angry feeling of how dare they do this to me. We love to be victims. I love to be a victim. Oh, my God. You know, if you have a terrible experience, I can't wait to have a terrible experience with customer service so I can tell somebody how horrible these guys treated me. I'm paying money to be treated this way. Okay, so here's like where it really gets bad. You know the term schadenfreude, that good feeling you get by something bad that happens to other people? So when my kids are grown now, but when my son was in junior high school, he had a friend I'll call Max, who had a sister Sarah, lovely, lovely family. And I always felt that Max and Sarah's parents put us to shame. They were church-going folks, not so much over in the Weil House. They went to symphonies and you know, art museums and shows, you know, or at ball games. And we watched TV. That's what I did. So, you know, they were really, I thought, a good job of being strict and firm with their kids. Any number of times, Max had to cancel a date with Marshall because he had to stay in because he did something that his parents didn't like. So years later, when I found out that Sarah got pregnant in high school and Max became an alcoholic, and I love these kids, but there was a part of me that just, like, all of a sudden I got let off the hook for being a slacker parent. Steve Jobs has terminal cancer. I'll tell you, I think that's terrible, but what I'm really thinking serves him right for being more successful than I. So, you know, I could go on and on, but I want to give you an opportunity to do it. And can't you not wait? So, I'm going to give you like 3 or 4 minutes, just write in your journal. And listen, while you're writing, if anybody wants to share, to stir up some other thoughts for people, we'd love to hear it. You know, the guide says that exposure contributes to, I have to read it. Exposure contributes to consciousness. So exposing yourself is a great thing to do. I feel lighter already.
So pull out your journal and just do, let it rip some of the negative pleasure you see in your own life. And you don't have to share it. If anyone likes to share, that would be great, but you don't need to.
Billy, I love it when I can prove someone wrong.
Yeah, and you're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, who doesn't?
Love it.
Yeah.
How does
Stephanie enjoy that?
I love it when people have been happy for too long. And I want them to get miserable.
And something bad. So I have two friends that did a really good job of saving for retirement. People I love dearly. And I, you know, I've really done a half-assed job at that. And one of them had a horrible flood and got everything wiped out. And the other one, it was awful. And these are people I love dearest, and two of my most dearest friends. And the other one had a horrific car accident. They got wiped out, like they got exceeded the medical bills on the first night. I mean, fortunately, everybody's okay. But, you know, that, how sickening is it? How sick do I feel that part of me feels like, well, who's got more money now? Not that they ever put in my face about it, but there's just...
See, there's a seat up there.
So we're just writing about those in our journals. You need something to write in your journals? Think about the negative pleasure we get, like things when we get pleasure out of bad things, quote bad things, like bad things happening to other people. So
anybody have something you want to share? You don't have to. It's a little hard to share this particular aspect of our false selves. But we have to contend with it. We have to cop to it. We have to admit it. We have to know it. And not, it feels uncomfortable, but not reject ourselves for it. Okay? Anybody have anything to share?
Kind of like Alex's, but when I know the right way, and I know it, and it's my way, and I have the inside information, and then you're wrong.
And the other person is wrong, it's like, yes. One more? Yes.
When someone, I really don't like people that are bullies or in power. And when I see someone that, like, if I saw a kid that was doing that and then just got the absolute shit kicked out of him, I would be so happy about that child getting pain rained down upon him.
Yes.
I'd be grinning for a week.
Yes.
That's a
All right, one more.
Please.
I have a coworker who's really a princess, and so whenever other coworkers complain about her, it makes me feel like I'm so much better. She's late, her husband left her,
there are people sitting here going, that's horrible. I don't do any of those things.
Is there anybody that feels like you don't have to do any of these things? Raise your hand. Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So there's two points I want to make about this. One is that it's stinky and it's unconscious. And we don't do it consciously, we do it unconsciously. And it doesn't work for us. The other is that the guide says that if we don't get our pleasure, or negative or otherwise, positive or otherwise, any pleasure from healthy areas in our life, we're going to get it from somewhere. And so we're going to go to negative pleasure. So that you can start to true yourself. If you find yourself more and more, catch yourself in, which is a great thing to do, to catch yourself in the negative pleasure, the more you know you're not getting it from a healthier source. And that's one of the reasons we work the path, is to get it from a healthier source. It's not that one is good and one is bad. You know, negative pleasure isn't really bad. It's, you know, I mean, we've judgments about it. It's not bad. It's just like eating too much sugar. It feels good for a moment, but you know you're going to feel like crap later on. And and the healthier forms of pleasure are obviously going to have a much longer lasting effect on our psyche.
Yes, and the point that we're making tonight is that the healthier form of pleasure is when we can wake up to how we reject ourselves and really see and know that and learn how to pleasure ourselves with caring, loving attention. We won't need the negative pleasure. It's the way we cope with how we have hurt ourselves. Okay, thank you, Billy. One more slide. We're going to take a break in case anybody is needing to run out. We're going to do it in just a minute. The next one. All right. So we are not, despite what the cynics say at the end of the story, we're not done with ourselves yet. We have a ways to go to evolve out of our limited state into something into our divine selves. We are not stuck forever in being the small-minded beings that we still are. Our greatest song is yet unsung. We have a choice. We can remain the same, or it is possible to choose to enter the path to transform our humanity. And each step we take creates a little opening in our spirit. When we create a little opening by being honest about who we are, then the universal streamings of loving life will come in, and it's as if a little candle is lit into each of these openings. Bit by bit, glimmers of new life will be occurring in our beings and on our planet when we can be honest about who we are. Where once there was darkness in our lives, there's now an opening, and the streamings of our all-loving universe can flow in, and the love of the universe can come in to guide us. We do not do the healing. We open the spaces so that the universe can come in and heal us. We tell the truth. We get honest. We grant ourselves acceptance. And the greater life that we are, then come in and can heal us. Before we take the break, Barb and Billy are going to give us a demo that hopefully will be familiar to all of us in some way and show us a way out using some pathwork principles.
Not too good. I'm in a mood. Crap mood.
Ah, sorry to hear that.
Yeah,
Yeah, I got this. I have this client. He's one of my absolute biggest clients, and everything has to be completely perfect. There's no such thing as, you know, a typo in a first draft can throw him into a panic, or an upset, which throws me into a panic because he's my biggest client. I'm ready for, you know, to fire me at a moment. I don't know. I'm really. What are you doing there? Are you listening to me at all?
Yeah, I got. Yeah.
I really. Could you like put that away or something? Because I. You know what? I'm sorry, but I'm feeling like I'm really getting irritated. So I'm gonna take a break.
You do that.
Hey, Barb.
Hi, Bill.
Can I talk to you for a minute?
Yeah.
Listen, a couple hours ago when we were talking, I got really angry and I kind of didn't like the way I acted and I took it out on you and I didn't feel like I was being responsible. So I want to apologize.
You know what? I want to apologize to you. I was really distracted. I really didn't want to talk to or listen to anyone. There's some stuff going on at my house I've been anxious about and I was completely insensitive. I really was not even seeing you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, I actually had to go, like, meditate to, like, move the energy. And then I journaled for a while, and I kind of got down to what it was, which, in terms of, like, there's a fundamental thing in me that goes crazy when someone criticizes me, so perfectionist drives me absolutely insane. But, so it's, you know, so I was really, you know, that was useful, but I'm still kind of confused about it. And you're such a great person to talk to.
So true. what would you like to talk about now? I've got some.
I would love to talk about it. So that's the other thing I realized. I didn't really set you up. I didn't say, hey, Barb, I got something I need to get off my chest. You have a moment to talk. And, you know, I didn't create the space for it. I just launched in and expected you to be there for it. And you're always a great listener when you do that, when I do that. So, yes, I would like to take advantage of that. What do you
suggest? Now is a really great time. I'd love a cup of coffee, though. Would you? And can I run some of my stuff by you,
Absolutely.
Too? Actually, yeah.
That okay. would be great. Let's
well, just it. Let's play over. Who's going to go first?
All right. Yeah.
What do you see there?
Personal responsibility.
Personal responsibility. What else?
Respect.
Openness.
Yeah. Openness.
Honesty.
Honesty. And a willingness to kind of go back in and put in some correction after the false self had botched it, right? So we don't have to leave it at that. There's more available. So, which we will work on in the second half of this evening. Now you can go take a break, have some refreshments, go to the restroom, check the books on the table, see if there's anything you would like to have.
How long?
How about 15 minutes? We'll ring the bell and be back. A number of you came to me on the break and said, okay, you know, like, I get that. Now what do we do? Hopefully the second half we can start moving into steps that you can take, ways that you can start to confront and face and transform what it is that we are admitting to tonight. So
So when we talk about transformation, the first prerequisite step always is to be able to say, and this is very difficult, the cause is in me. Because I am a human being, I share in that consciousness that rules the world to some degree or another. That consciousness creates all that is wrong in my life and in the world. Yes, we are all victims, it is true. But we are not victims to some unknown forces beyond and over which we have no control. And this would be the takeaway for tonight. Rather, we are victims to the negativity of the false human consciousness that we all share in common, over which we have some control if we pick up the tools and we go do our work. We are victims to the false motivations of our false selves. That's all. I mean, that's all. That's all that it's ever been. That's the bad news and the good news. Our own incorrect, distorted misconceptions and beliefs create our individual and our collective reality and causes our suffering. We do it. So there's no real case for blaming our parents for our lives. That would be to keep ourselves only stuck in the cycle of misery and rejection. The cause is in me. Our parents were merely the conduits for the false consciousness was passed along to them. Through them, it was passed along to us. And now we carry it, and we can choose to perpetuate it, or we can make the decision that it will stop with me. In my life, I am going to stop the cycle of human pain and rejection for me and for the planet. Angelise Arian, who's, I don't know how many of you know her, but you've heard me mention her often, she's an internationally known anthropologist, teaches that our ancestors who have gone before us and dealt with the same negative human consciousness that we are dealing with, that they're actually sitting on our shoulders, rooting us on and whispering to us, maybe you will be the ones. Maybe you will be the ones. And maybe we will. The cause is in me. The cause is in us. And the barriers that were placed in me by rejecting human consciousness of our parents now live in me. And it's my job, if I so choose, we have a choice because we've been given free will. My job is to remove the barriers rather than weep and wail and gnash my teeth about how I have been wronged. We have all been wronged. I can choose to lay claim to myself to regain my footing when I misunderstood and thought that something other than I was the problem. No matter what, we must face in the last analysis that I am free to choose my own attitude about what it is that happened to me. I can choose my own attitude to respond to how I get hurt. And it is my attitude that either places me in heaven or hell on earth. The cause is in me.
Oh, yeah. I can just hold it, Billy, if it's easy.
Well,
think that would be fun.
No.
Testing.
Hey, it's on.
Yeah,
go.
I can
really
hear myself.
How's this?
That's
good.
Good.
If my mouth is right on.
Yes. Oh, okay. If you have your journals and a pen ready, we're going to do another exercise. And this one, although the cause is in me, you know, the truth is what we're much more attuned to is the causes in you.
Yeah.
So, and it's important to own that piece, and actually that piece is really a gateway back around if you really pursue it. So what we're going to do is write about a recent situation in which we felt upset or angry or frustrated because of something someone else did, or a situation that should have been handled differently, or we might be upset even with something with ourselves, you know, angry with ourselves about something or frustrated with ourselves. And then you're blaming yourself. So that would work too. Or maybe it's a pet peeve, an annoyance, an irritation. Just, I'm sure it'll come right to you. Nancy's got them. And what we're going to do is, this is similar to what Sue had me do sitting there unexpectedly. I didn't know she was going to have me do that. Is, what would you like to say to yourself, or maybe it's things you say to yourself, or to your partner, or maybe you've said them, or to the situation, or it might have been a situation where you had to stuff it all in. And so what you're going to do is let it rip. Let every vicious, nasty thing you want to say and awful and really cut loose. A noble bar. No one's going to see this, by the way. You can take it home and burn it later tonight. So this is really just for yourself to just get it out. Because often we get stuck there. And that tends to be the lid on the real stuff going on beneath. And I realize now that's what I experienced. Once I let some of that stuff up, it really helped wash up what was going on. So that's the reason for doing this. We're not doing this to be self-indulgent and stay and get stuck there, but it's a way to let that vent. So I'm going to give you a few minutes to vent, really, and blame and really get it out on that paper.
Especially where you are blaming someone else for your misery and your unhappiness. Yeah. Just let yourself have it. Don't be concerned about being fair and just, because in this way we're not. Just say it like it is.
Boy, some of you are really doing the time. Good job.
Another minute. Okay, good work, guys. Now you can keep working on that at home tonight. You don't have to stop here. It's, man, you, something's really probably opening up for you. I want to take a couple minutes now to write about what exactly should have happened. How should it have gone? What should they have done, said, whatever. But to be okay for you. So write what you should have or what should have happened. And I'm going to take a couple minutes to write about that.
If they had done what, then thus and so, then you wouldn't have to be feeling what you're feeling.
Now, I want you to think about the difference between what actually happened and what you believe should have happened. And this is kind of a tough part. I want you to see if you can identify what need would have been met had it happened the way you wanted. And to help you a bit with that, we have a list of needs, real needs here to pass out. And that, it might help you look through that. That it can be very difficult for us to identify that there's a need that wasn't met.
Pick more. Spread them out.
Just me, not me, bitch!
Now you may, if you may not be able to exactly identify your need on this list. This list isn't exhaustive, but it probably includes probably some of the most important needs. But one thing you'll notice, there are a few things that are not on this list that usually come up for me. And for example, the need to be right. The need to control, I noticed, is not on there. The need to be perfect, also missing.
These are all false needs. From the false self.
Taking care of.
Oh, good one. Good one, Alicia. How about the need for approval and admiration of others? The need to have our own way. The need to fix the other. The need to cooperate. So, yeah, those fall into the realm of false needs. I was sorry to hear because I thought they were real. They feel real, don't they?
I know a really good one that we could add. Oh, the need to relieve our mother's guilt.
Wow.
Is that a false name? Yeah, it's a false
name. Good one. What we discover, or what I've discovered about these false needs and what Password teaches us, is they're substitutes for real needs, real legitimate needs that we have given up on ever being met, and we struggle and struggle to meet a false need, and it doesn't matter how often. I mean, sometimes we're successful with those false needs, but it wouldn't matter if we were 100% successful. That need could never be met because it's not the real need that's longing inside of us to be fulfilled. And even if our need is on this list and we're able to identify it, for some of us, you know, if this was an unmet need from childhood, we can be unrealistic about how that need be met. We want everyone to feel that need all of the time, and which is absolutely impossible and not going to happen. In fact, it's impossible for even one person to meet that need on our part all of the time. So if you could identify at least one need on this list that wasn't met by the situation as it actually happened, I mean, use that really as a gateway into really getting in touch with the pain of not having that need met. Because we learn in Pathwork that every demand, every should we make on others or the world to be different is the reflection of a legitimate, unmet, and realistic childhood need. Often we didn't get what we really needed from the significant people in our lives for whatever reason, and it's the source of much of our frustration and suffering, which we try to alleviate by getting others or the world to feel that need, which makes us utterly dependent on others in the world to be different than what they are. And it sucks up a lot of our energy. And we end up feeling resentful, frustrated, angry, and even enraged. And the solution, Pathwork tells us, is to identify and acknowledge the real unmet needs and allow ourselves to feel the pain and sorrow of not having that need met. Continually trying to get unrealistic needs met as adults is a defense against feeling that pain that was too overwhelming for us as children, but as adults we can handle that pain now. And really get
touch with owning and feeling that pain will automatically and organically begin to shift our need to have it, to get it from others. Because we'll have acknowledged we're not going to, we felt the pain. And it's an incredibly healing experience. So hopefully you'll be able to use this list as a starting point to help identify some of those needs that you didn't get. You may not even recognize that some of those on that list were human needs at all. I know I didn't. And, you know, the purpose for that is so that we can let go of expending so much energy trying to get needs met out there. Thank you all for your cooperation.
Thanks, Barb. Billy, we probably better move this.
Yep.
We'll have a collision.
Screaming, I think. Screaming.
I'm still in Barb's process. I like that.
That whole I am in some way at cause in a conflict or a messy situation that is going on with me and another person is a way of becoming empowered rather than stuck in our helplessness and our rage. We start out with you, 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 you. We move to what's the hurt that's underneath that? And underneath that, what is the need that did not get met in childhood that can only be met by me and my grieving and my consolation and my releasing the pain so that I'm freed up in my relationships with my friends, with my partners, with my parents? It's now my job. Rather than to carry the rejection forward, it's my job to now give it to myself. Thanks, Barb. And the guide says that it's a great spiritual accomplishment when we can begin to see that the cause is within the self, that we have power ourselves to work with every conflictual situation we come upon. Rather than making ourselves powerless and independent, you have to be different. You have to change. You have to stop being that way. Two, what's getting stirred in me that I can heal and I can become empowered and released and in peace? Okay, the cause is in me. I did want to give one other piece on that one that we just finished that that I didn't see until I turned the page. The guide says that the anxiety and the fear that we live with and our upset with the other or with the world will begin to disappear to the precise degree that we search for the cause of our own present suffering and find the solution within ourselves. That's a great gift and a great outcome. So, the false self is anything but honest. It is composed of deceit, strategies, hiding, pretending, getting back, doing what it does not want done to it, hypocritical, one standard for it, another standard for others. It treats you in the way it does not want to be treated by you. It judges you in the way it does not want to be judged by you. It criticizes you in the way that it does not want to be criticized. Because it is false, it is not honest. There is nothing more important than to get honest about our falseness. If we're not honest, we cannot trust and respect ourselves, so we can't trust and respect others, because we figure they're the same way that we are, and they are. Everything we deceive ourselves about creates a barrier between ourselves and others and the divine. And the false self does not want to be in truth. It does not want to change. It gives many excuses not to connect with our divine selves. And the guide says that admitting our negativity is the greatest act of love. And it takes courage and humility. And courage and humility come from our real selves. We have to be with ourselves as we are and not as we wish we were in order to be able to connect with the divine and heal. Being willing to observe what is true for now with objectivity and compassion is to become a spiritual warrior. But we don't always want to see. We don't want to see ourselves. It offends our pride to honestly face up to how we are now as human beings, and we put in place many defenses and disguises so that we do not have to see and know ourselves as we are. When we begin to make the switch from our everyday common false reacting and defending to being honest and open about who we are, the universe inside of us shivers with movement. Again, we have a choice. Do we truly want to see our false selves and all of its negativities and all of its permutations? There is no greater aim. If we're sincere in heart and we have done our own searching and looking, then we can ask for help from the divine, from spirit. I want to see the truth about myself, and I want to accept and forgive myself as I am. The Pathwork Guide says that it is a universal law that if we have been self-responsible, if we see ourselves as cause, and we ask for help, help will come from the divine and the equal measure to the sincerity of our request. We must accept and forgive ourselves for our uncleanness and the brokenness that stains our lives. Anne Lamott wrote that when we refuse to forgive ourselves or others, it is like drinking the rat poison and waiting for the rat to die. The universe can only get in and work its divine purpose and healing when we get compassionately honest. We don't do the healing. We think we do. We work and we try to fix and correct and change. We don't do the healing. We get honest. We grant acceptance. And spirit comes in and does the work of the healing and the transforming. We're going to watch a clip from the Andy Griffin Show that demonstrates beautifully what it's like when we are in defensive, reactive mode, and what it is like when we are in truth. As you watch the scene, check in with your heart, check in with your body, and see what you're feeling as we go along.
I need a second.
You can have a second.
The Secretary is now in session. Mr. Milton, you have lodged a charge of malfeasance in office against Mr. Taylor here. Are you prepared to present your bill of particulars?
Yes, Commissioner. Thanks. I have a witness who will verify these facts.
Who is this witness?
Bernard Fife.
Huh? I should take a stand. Me? I'm a witness?
Would you take the witness chair, please?
How can I be a witness against Andy?
Do you mind taking the witness chair, please? You are Bernard Fife.
Of course I am.
Just answer yes or no.
Yeah.
Good. And is it not true that you yourself made a statement that Sheriff Taylor was lax in the fulfillment of his duties?
Where'd you get a crazy thing like that?
Allow me to put it in your own words. Speaking of Sheriff Taylor, you said, and I quote, "The kid's a little lax. He doesn't learn to talk shit."
Where'd you get that? I never said no such a thing.
Perhaps I can refresh his memory. Is the young lady here? What's up? Do you think it's necessary? I think it's necessary, yes. It will simplify matters.
It's that college kid! Andy, it's that college kid!
Commissioner, this is Gene Bossel, a newspaper reporter and employee of Mr. Jack.
A reporter? What's he got a college now? This is a trick, the whole thing is in town!
Recognize yourself?
Do you have a frequent prisoner by the name of Otis Campbell, the town drunk?
Well, we don't say that like that.
What's the answer yes or no?
Idea.
And this town drunk is allowed to arrest himself, to lock himself into a cell, and is then allowed to effect his own release?
Well, you put it like that.
Yes or no?
Idea.
Didn't you say that sometimes certain crimes go unpunished?
What?
Didn't you say you'd written jaywalking tickets only to have the sheriff tear them up?
Yeah.
And didn't you say that the sheriff uses a squad car for other than official business?
Yeah.
Didn't you say that you once needed the car in the line of duty, but the sheriff was delivering groceries?
Well, yeah.
And is it not true that these are not isolated incidents, that they happen all the time?
Well,
didn't you say for yourself?
Yes, yes, yes!
Thank you. You may step down.
Andy?
I said you may step down.
You can say that all you want to, but I ain't stepping down. This is a hearing, ain't it? Well, it seems to me you ought to hear everything, not just a bunch of yeses.
Very well, you may speak if you wish to.
Ma'am. Sure, I said all my things. But the truth is, sometimes I get carried away with myself. When I was talking with the young lady there, I got to bragging a little bit. I guess that's one of my faults. All them things I said, for example, his using the squad car for personal reasons. Sure, he was delivering groceries to Emma Watson because she was too sick to get down to the market. And that's just one example of the things Andy's done for the folks in this town. I can give you a lot more. You got to understand, this is a small town. The sheriff is more than just a sheriff. He's a friend. As far as Andy knowing his job, I'd just like for you to take a look in the record book, Mr. Jackson. You know there ain't been a major crime committed in this town, thanks to Sheriff Taylor? The only ruckus you'd ever have in Mayberry is if you tried to remove him from office. Then you'd have a riot. You ask me if Andy runs a taut ship, Mr. Milton. Well, no, he don't. But that's because of something that he's been trying to teach me ever since I started working for him. And that is that when you're a lawman and you're dealing with people, you do a whole lot better if you go not so much by the book, but by the heart. I guess maybe that's kind of hard for some of you to understand, but I don't know. That's all I got to say.
All right. So what did you see there? Raise your hand. Anybody see the false, reactive, defensive self?
Yes. Yeah, or his eyes on, yeah.
Uh-huh. And did anyone see him move into truth? Taking responsibility, owning, being at cause? How did you feel in your bodies when he was... How did that feel?
Stressful.
Stressful, tense. How did you feel when he opened up and said, yes, I did that. I get carried away and I was bragging. How did that feel?
Good.
Yeah, did you feel the expansion, the openness, the life shivering, the movement happening? That's great. So, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Joe, you can move on to feeling your feelings. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that we have been greatly misled by our false self is what we have been taught about our feelings. We have come to believe that many things about feelings are not helpful, that we should get rid of them,
that somehow we can't take them, that we can't bear them, that they hurt too much, that they are weak, that they should be hidden, that if we let them in, they'll never stop, that they're embarrassing. Or conversely, for some types, we believe that nothing matters like feelings, and we can nurse them and exaggerate them and use them as emotional power over others. All of these negative beliefs and attitudes toward our feelings cut us off from one of the richest sources of fulfillment that life makes available. When we can see them and feel them, our true feelings are a way of connecting with our deepest selves, others, and the divine. When we were young, we were vulnerable and powerless and helpless to our feelings. They may have been too big for us, especially if we didn't have the right kind of emotional support. So we learned to numb ourselves, to send them away, and to wall them off. When we grew up, we didn't know to put away childish things, and we have tended to keep the same patterns in place, and we either greatly blunt or greatly exaggerate our feelings and truly miss out on the magnificent beauty and the healing potential of being in them and seeing with them and feeling them. Janine Roth teaches that when sadness is felt and explored, it may turn into a lush meadow of peace. But first, let's talk about what feelings are not. Feelings are not reactions. Reactions always have a judgment, a blame. It shouldn't be this way, a criticism in them. Our reactions come from our false, fragile, wobbly selves. When we are in reaction, we are not yet in truth. Our feelings come from our real selves. Our feelings are true. There's an intense energy that rises up in us when we are in reaction. Because with a reaction, we're fighting, we're resisting, we're treating what is as if it shouldn't exist. We're intensely busy blaming. I can't believe you said that to me. You did that on purpose. You're trying to hurt me. Those idiotic Democrats, they're just a bunch of softies and bleeding hearts. They're going to drain us dry. Those Republicans, they're just selfish. They don't care about anything. You idiot, you cut me off. You should have stood up for me. I hate the way you want to talk to me. You're just a coward. On and on we go with reactions. Or I'm an idiot. Or I'm stupid. Or I'm worthless. Again, the way we know we are in reaction, and therefore not in truth, is that we are judging, blaming, and treating something we don't like as if it should not exist. Which is ridiculous. It exists. If we're in reaction with others, we would do best to keep our mouths shut. This is not the time for honesty. It's the time to go handle yourself. As Barb was saying, usually under a reaction is a real feeling or a real need. I'm feeling hurt. I'm feeling scared. I'm feeling alone. I'm feeling disappointed. I'm feeling embarrassed, vulnerable, disconnected, unloved. I'm not feeling a part of things. Feelings are free of judgment. They just are. They are life's music, how we have been impacted. Touched, hurt, disappointment, missing, relief, being moved, grieving, aching, lonely, wanting, desiring, anguish at injustice. Often we have to go through our reactions to get to these real feelings, as Barb said, that are underneath. when we communicate with others, it's best to communicate from our true feelings and not our reactions. But sometimes we have to start with our messy reactions and then clean them up later, as Billy and Barb did. Feelings, even if they hurt, carry us home to our real selves, to the divine that is within us. They come from and through our heart, our love center. If we close ourselves off to our feelings, we have closed ourselves off to the divine that is within us and surrounding us and wants to help us. Some of the most important feelings to feel are the pain of the false self, where we have rejected ourselves. We have to pick up the false self into our own arms and grieve and grieve its painful ways. All the symptoms in our lives are signs of unresolved, unworked through feelings, often, as many of you have said, from childhood. Fear must be felt through and held, rather than allowing the fear to be the dictator in our lives, telling us what we can and cannot do. We need to pick up our fear and say, come on, fear, we have places to go and things to do. The guide says that puny fear is what holds us back and has us miss what life has to offer. We can choose to move away from the false thinking in our minds and move to our true feelings. Real self and real feelings are one and the same thing. Feelings create an opening in the body. Reactions cause the body to contract and shut down and be tense. Feelings may be painful in the body, but there's a natural, organic movement with them. They are leading somewhere. They're leading to an opening, an expansion, a deepening. And when we open up and become intimate with all of life, we weep a lot. There are things in our lives and in our world every day that causes us hurt. To sit with ourselves and weep for how we have been impacted by life is a great sweetness, a kindness to our soul. It is all right to cry. It is an act of great self-love. And there is much to be enjoyed about, to be moved by, thrilled by, and touched by. The goodness that we see and feel in people's hearts, people's vulnerability, our capacity to care. Smiling babies, kittens, puppies, sunsets, fall days, early morning rain, catching the wind in our face, the healing river, the green rolling hills, the plants breaking ground in the spring, the rising of the moon. These feelings bring the joy of aliveness and connection to our hearts and to our divine selves. When we are in these feelings of joy and gratitude, we are in our real, true selves. When we are in our real feelings, we are not in our heads, where our false self lives, but rather, we are in our hearts. Barbara Jane, where are you?
So this is going to be an experience that we're going to start off with journaling, and then you're going to be invited to work with a dyad, so one other person, where we're going to have you journal about something from your everyday life, perhaps a movie that you've watched, or something you saw on TV, or something that you read that you felt like you really made you feel something, that you felt moved by, or that you know you had a reaction to. It could even be that person who cut you off in traffic. But just to give you a time, and this is going to be a journal experience that you're writing for yourself just to kind of get grounded in what your own ways that you were moved, or the feelings that you had, or your own reaction. But then you're going to be invited to share to your partner, one other person, what that experience was for you, or what it was like to write about it. So you can decide how much you want to disclose. We're doing this because a lot of times we have all of this stuff running up in our heads, but we don't really hear ourselves or really feel heard or understood in what we're experiencing. So it's a time that the other person in the dyad is going to simply openly listen to what you have to say, to your experience, and their job at that point is just to be open and to hear you. They can notice their own reactions to themselves, but you're not going to talk about that. And then we're going to switch so that each person has a chance to be the listener and each person has a chance to express. Any questions about that? Yes, Nancy.
So it can be either a positive feeling or
a reaction.
Yes, it can be a positive feeling, a way that you were moved. Or it could be, that's okay. I just saw the light. Or it could be an experience that you felt a reaction to. So you can decide on either. And then when you can share what you actually felt moved by and share that experience, or what it was like to journal. Okay? So we're going to give you a couple of minutes to journal, and then I'll ring the bell, and we'll ask you to get in your dyads. And as Sue said before, it really helps. And before we even start to journal, if you just put both feet on the floor, feel your spine. Oh, sorry, Peg. Oh, two people. So you with one other person. Thank you very much for asking that. I didn't clarify that.
Does it matter if we know the person?
No, it's up to you. So if you want to stretch and you don't know someone, that's fine. It's up to you. And is there anyone who doesn't feel comfortable talking with another person? Okay, go ahead, Peg.
What do we write again?
I'll go. Over. Okay. You're gonna write about an experience that you felt moved by. So a feeling, like maybe you read something or you listened to, you saw a movie and you were really moved or touched by it, or a song that you felt touched by, or a reaction that you had, like Billy said before about traffic and getting upset in traffic. So it can be a reaction, a pet peeve, but something that's okay for you to share with someone else, with one other person, and you're just going to write about it. But before you write, I'm going to ask you to have both feet on the floor, feel your spine, feel like your shoulders can just relax, and take a deep breath in and just tighten your whole self, and exhale and let go, and relax and feel the support of the chair under you. And take a deep breath in and tighten your whole self. And exhale and let go and feel the support of the chair under you. And one last time, take a deep breath in and tighten. And exhale and relax. And now just open and just ask yourself, what's something recently that happened to me that I felt moved by, touched by, or I felt a reaction to that I want to journal about? And just let it happen. We'll give you a few minutes. Just take another minute. So now if you would just join with one other person, and we're going to ask that as you talk about your experience, you can decide who goes first and who's the listener. We're going to ask that you don't have any talking during that experience, that you simply listen, which is a big gift, actually. It's not really that simple for most of us. And then we'll have you switch. I'll just give you two to three minutes to share, and then we'll have you switch. And we ask that there's not talking in between, just to keep it really as an open, listening, receptive, and then we'll give you a couple of minutes to share that experience with each other before we come back. Okay?
Even as a meditation.
And if you're going to move your chair at all, don't slide it on the floor because they're bamboo and they scratch. Somebody need a marker? Do you want a marker?
What that experience was like for you. You just have a minute to do that. you want to share with your partner what that experience was like for you, you have a minute that you can share. If you have anything you want to say, you don't have to.
What was it like to just be missing?
But also listening to you, I'm like, I should say,
expressing yourself or listening? Does anyone want to share what that was like?
Loving.
It's okay if you don't.
Very loving to just be totally present for somebody else. Hmm. Just love that.
Thanks, Alicia. Okay.
Well, I found myself having an emotional reaction to her emotional reaction.
That is a way that even as friends we can kind of build it up with each other rather than help somebody get grounded. Yeah. Alex and then Nancy, then we'll switch.
Franny was sharing something that's painful for her, and I found myself, like, I really had to concentrate to not want to, like, block out her pain. Mm. Like, you know, like, it really took, like, I really had to pay attention to not, like, to, like, I found myself going to fear, like, oh my god, that sounds really bad, it's really scary, and, you know, so it really took a, like, it was an effort.
A lot of consciousness to be, stay present.
Yeah, to stay present, and compassion and empathy, and yeah. let her have her experience and support that, and not have it mean anything about me or my, you know, my experience.
What a gift both for yourself and for Fran that you were able to do that.
But what's interesting that Alex just said that, because I felt that completely heard, like I felt an opening from his expression, which was actually, he closed his eyes, he kind of took a breath, he, you know, commiserated with his body language, and yet I felt he was completely present for me. And so interesting that he said that, because I did not pick up at all mixed things going on for him. I felt a total openness.
Just the quietness allowed you to feel heard.
And honesty. I mean, I felt like there was an honesty too, but, you know, even though he might have had some struggle going on in there, I felt like, okay, my boy, you know, he was there. Really,
and what he's saying is he worked to be there.
Yeah.
He worked to be there, which is part of the gift.
And I think that's what we have to do, is to work to be there. We're going to have to go on because we are going to finish at 10 and we have a few more things to do, but thank you. The value of that experience, you had someone who was observing and being with you as you faced and shared what you had to face and share. The invitation is that we learn to be with ourselves in that way. Joe, you can switch to the next one. That we actually accept ourselves where we are. No matter what is going on in the moment, if I am reacting, if I am hurting, if I am judging, if I am blaming, if I am being goofy, if I am being stupid, it's a great act of self-love to simply listen and be with that and refuse to buy into the cruelty of judging ourselves. The judgment will be there, but we don't have to buy in. There is no greater gift of self-love than to accept ourselves. When we accept ourselves, the beauty of the universe can pour into us and help build us and embolden us and strengthen us. I come and stand upon the altar that is my one wild, precious life with all that I am and all that I am not, and I will bow and I will say, thank you. I and it can only be as we are right now. It can be no other way. There is more of us to come, and it will arrive from our sweet, pain-filled, anguished acceptance of what is. There is a warm stream of universal energy and life that's giving and reaching out toward us at all times. Some of it pours into us simply because the universe is kind and understanding and loving, but there is so much more available if we will create those little pockets of openness, of acceptance, so that the universe can come into us and touch us and heal us. It wants to. Our acceptance is like swinging open a gate so that life can pour in to help us. Then if we reach back to the universe with our yearning and our longing and our desire to know the divine, we begin to create a beautiful dance with the divine that starts with our acceptance of ourselves just as we are right now. This warm stream has the ability to awaken us, activate us, and heal us at any time. The problem is that we spend most of our time attending to, disputing, fighting with, agreeing with, coping with our false selves, and we squander so much of our precious energy that we could be in this beautiful dance with spirit if we could merely accept ourselves. The universe is waiting for us, and it is all love, and the love of the universe is in every pore of our being.
So I want to do a visualization with you, take you on a virtual tour of heaven, and all you need to do is close your eyes if you want to, and listen. And so go ahead and do that. Feel your feet on the floor. Do whatever it is you do that helps you get relaxed and comfortable and present. Take some breaths. Blow them out if you like. Feel the tension in your body. Let it go. Tension in your forehead and your jaw. Just see if you'd be willing to let it relax. Relax your back. Take a couple more breaths. I want you to imagine that up until now, you've spent your entire life in a completely dark dungeon. You've seen almost nothing, heard almost nothing. You've never had anything but bread, cabbage, and water for sustenance. And then one day, as an adult, you're released. So imagine you've been in darkness your whole life, and now you're being let out. For the first time, you see daylight. You see your first tree. You don't even know it's a tree. It's just this gigantic, magical, beautiful thing. You walk on soft green grass for the first time. You don't know it's grass. It's just this amazing carpet of a million green soft leaves. You look up at the blue, what is it? It never seems to end, with enormous, puffy, white things just floating along. You see beautiful creature you later learn as a chipmunk, disappear into a magical hole. A squirrel impossibly walks across a high wire. There are beautiful creatures flying overhead. You hear this beautiful chirping. You smell the perfume of a flowering tree. You never smelled anything like that in your life. You take a bite of a grape and experience an explosion of flavor in your mouth. You wonder if you are dreaming. You realize there's only one explanation. You have arrived in heaven. Keeping your eyes closed, in your mind's eye, look around at everything with wonder and awe, as if you are seeing it for the first time. Now, I want you to picture Van Gogh's Starry Night. Just picture Van Gogh's Starry Night and imagine, and just notice how that makes you feel. Now picture the nighttime sky when it's clear enough to see the Milky Way. Notice how that makes you feel. Imagine yourself spending an hour looking at the Mona Lisa. Imagine what that would be like, how that feels. Now imagine watching out of a window in your home. Notice how that makes you feel. When we're really present, what we see out of our window is magical, far more priceless than the Mona Lisa, and available to all of us all the time. 18 days after you were conceived, your heart started beating. And it's been beating every single second of your life. When you were born, your lungs started working, and your body started oxygenating your blood on your own for the first time. In all these years, your body has never failed you. That's amazing. Focus on the breath that gives you life. That shift in focus can bring you home. Home to heaven. Heaven is always a breath away. Take a breath and let yourself be amazed. I'm going to give you a minute before we return to the room, and I'd like to invite you to just bring wonder to your experience of the world. Just bring wonder to your experience of the amazing body you've been given. Bring wonder to your experience of this magical, beautiful planet we share. Bring wonder to your experience of whatever it is you find beautiful and amazing. Go ahead and do that if you like, and then I'll ring the bell in just a minute. When I allowed myself to get present, to just have a squandered divine presence, I wept and grieved over it for a while. There may be times when you want to grieve over how much you squandered presence. We all do it. How much we've taken our hearing, sight, touch, smell, taste, our bodies for granted. And grieving's different than beating yourself up. It'd be easy to beat ourselves up for having squandered heaven, but that'd be more of the same. try to stay out of the realm of judgment, good and bad. Squandering is not bad and presence is not good. Moreover, all we have is this moment. What will we do with this moment? How do we get to or return ourselves to this amazing heaven on earth? The secret's in being present, and this is something we have to constantly retrain ourselves to do. It's what we do on the path. And we have three essential tools for this. One is meditation. Meditation, at its essence, is simply the practice of noticing when you're not being present and returning yourself to being present. It's noticing the conversation in your head and continually, consciously choosing not to engage in that conversation. Another tool Sue's been talking a lot about is facing that part of ourselves that we resist. Because resistance causes persistence, and the more we face the negative self-talk and so forth, insecurity, the less control it has over us. The final piece is in practicing gratitude, which is a way of retraining the brain to see the amazing gifts that we already have, rather than focus on our fearful thoughts. And we all have the moon, we all have the Milky Way, we all have this amazing planet, whatever else you might not have. So the more we practice it, the more we'd be present to the heaven on earth that is our birthright. I want to close with, I've known this guy, but I didn't really know his story, but I got his story today. He was a master carpenter who fell off a roof and was in a coma for a month. And when he woke up, he said he couldn't believe how beautiful the planet was. And it's been that way for him ever since. What also happened to him was he lost all of his skills as a master carpenter. So I asked him, if you could trade how you experience the world right now for having all your skills back as a master carpenter, would you do it? And he said, not on your life. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. So when we can accept our false selves, when we can look at ourselves as we are, moment by moment, and extend compassion to ourselves, we can begin to get out of our minds the false self, the main toolbox is our minds, and we can step into an opening, a space that comes with being here now. This moment holds the possibility for new creation, the now faced, the painful, the ugly, the beautiful, the not run away from, brings a wealth of beautiful energy and substance and joyfulness. Whatever is at this moment could be no other way. There are a zillion occurrences that came before that have it be exactly as it is now. And this moment, no matter what, offers richness, no matter how undesirable the circumstances may be. If we can relax into what is, even if it's not what we want, it will eventually bring you what you desire. So this beautiful picture of the universe that we just saw, who you really are, who we really are, is literally a switch cut from that infinite, magnificent, beautiful, abundant fabric of the universe. That infinite beauty, goodness lives inside of you. We are cut from the fabric of life that is our divine real self. It is there, it has always been there, and we are merely separated from it by our false selves. But our false selves and all of their tragic glory, ironically, are path back to our destiny. We live in a benign universe. There is nothing to fear except false consciousness. And rather than granting false consciousness reality and truth by fearing it, we could be reckoning with and transforming it. the universe and its goodness and our goodness are the ultimate reality. They are real. They are good. Again, you are a swatch of that fabric of the universe. The divine stream of life courses through you beneath your false self. I and life are truly one. Can we pray? Dear precious divine life, we lay ourselves at your altar in all of our brokenness. We wish we were better than we are, but we come to you in your infinite goodness just as we are. And we offer to you our humanness just as it is at this moment. We open our hearts and soul to the strength that is in you and that flows in and through each one of us and throughout this room. We know that it's in that strength that we will find the courage to confront our humanity and discover our divine. Amen. We're going to take one extra moment and close with a wonderful, upbeat song.
Make this place your home.